This is the closing market report for the second day of October 2019. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. A busy day, so we'll go straight to the numbers. December contract at the CME Group in corn finished 4 3/4 lower at 387 3/4. The March down 4 3/4 at 399 3/4. November beans 5 3/4 lower at 913 3/4. The January at 927 3/4 down 4 3/4. The bean oil up 23 cents. Bean meal down $3.80. And soft red winter wheat finished the July contract at 506, down 8 1/4 for the day. Live cattle futures up $1.42, the feeders $1.10 higher, and lean hogs were down 35 cents. We're now joined by Jackie Vakes of Total Farm Marketing by Stuart Peterson. Hey, Jackie, thank you so much for being with us for the day.
Hi, Todd.
So let's start in the same place as usual. We'll begin with those support and resistance levels. I bet because of the grain stocks numbers on Monday that they might have changed.
Yeah, you heard me laugh now, didn't you? Yes, they have. I mean, you know, it's pretty interesting because when you look at December corn, 362 is now the support level, 314 and 288 after that. Resistance still at that 392 level, 415 and 439. Now, we did fill the 392 and 3/4 gap yesterday, but we were not able to close above it. And that's what we really need to do to get the next leg up on this. So March, 395 is support. 371 and then 322, resistance at 411, 425, and 448, all very different from what we were looking at last week. Soybeans, November, support $9, 872, and then 812, resistance 934, 955, 986, March, support 914, 839, and then 780. And then we have resistance at 960, 997, and 1034. And it's interesting because beans both, after the report, have closed out and above the downtrend line. So that's something that, you know, is a positive technical, and hopefully we can continue to maintain that position.
Where's the managed money putting their funds?
You know how you and I always talk about that, you know, that so much of this is money flow going around and around and around. Well, they dropped their short contracts in soft red wheat to 4,000 from 18,000 last week. They are now net short 98,000 corn compared to 160,000 last week, 22,000 beans compared to 42,000. They're short 44,000 soy meal compared to 54 last week, and net long 17,000 soy oil compared to 21. So they dropped their long position in soy oil just slightly, but significantly dropped their short positions in the other commodities.
What do we know about yields that have been coming in across the Midwest?
Well, you know, I guess I'd have to say in some cases surprisingly good, with the exception of Indiana and Ohio. I've got a few here. Freeborn, Minnesota, first two fields of beans came in at 60. That was better than what they expected. Pipestone, Minnesota came in at 50, and they thought they were going to get 65. And so, you know, I guess the expectations are all over the place. In Iowa, these are all 2.4 maturities. In Washington, 66, Keokuk, 62, Louisiana, 66, 51 in Washington, 69, 58, 71, all significantly lower than what the APHs are on those particular acres. North Central Nebraska on irrigation, 65 bushel to the acre. And that was across the scale. When you look at Stark County, Illinois, which is north of Peoria, 238.47 and 230.6, both of those were April planted fields. Iowa, 80 acres of beans that was planted the last week of April made 65. So it's all over the place. Now we get to Decatur County, Indiana, 64 bushels. APH is 67, so they weren't off too badly. Corn, 206. We were planted that on the 15th and the 16th of May, so you know they also had some early time, and they haven't really had much rain, so that's one of the things that kind of held them down. But there was another field there, approximately yielding 45 bushel to the acre. Last year they had 80 bushel, and their APH is 70. So you can see it's just all over the place. You really don't know. And FC Stone raised their corn yield to 169.3 today and dropped their bean yield to 48.1 versus the USDA. USDA is below that, and so I don't know what it's going to be at the end, Todd. I guess we'll all have to wait and see.
Yeah, so that yield news will have to be worked into the WASDE along with the grain stocks figures that were released on Monday. They were, a surprise to the marketplace.
That's an understatement. When you think about it, we had corn that came in at 2.1 billion for ending stock 913 on beans, 2.385 on wheat. Not a big huge difference on wheat, but it certainly was on corn and beans. When you look at small grains, the wheat crop came in just a hair below what the average guess was. The interesting part was corn stocks, were 331 million below the USDA ending stocks from September. And, that implies that usage was over a billion bushels in this fourth quarter, which is 70% higher than last year. So it could mean that, last year's crop was overstated. That's where this probably came from. And the adjustments are always made in feed and residual. Now, bean stocks came in 92 million, lower than the September USDA. And, last year's production was adjusted down by 116 million. And so, it was very interesting. Wheat production was dropped only because of an acreage reduction, not because of a yield reduction. And again, usage caused it to be a little bit higher than what we thought it was going to be, mostly because of implied feed residual usage. So when I looked at the on-farm stocks, Todd, at that 2.1 billion corn, that's 35.6% of the crop. Last year, we had 29% on the farm. Beans at 913 are 29% of the crop. 23 is what we had last year. Wheat at 2.385 billion, 32.5% of the crop versus 26.4% last year. Now, you might want to take that as being negative, but we have to understand that we had a much larger crop last year than what we had, the year before, and that would imply that the stocks would probably be lower. And on top of that, the good news about this is that the commercial owns now at least two-thirds of the stock, if not more, and therefore we know that we probably have found the lows. Doesn't mean we can't go back and visit those. But once the commercial owns the majority, they're now the seller of a crop. So they certainly don't want the prices to falter. And kind of interesting the way everything changes as we move through the crop year.
We've been talking about supply, but exports play a big factor in the price of corn and soybeans. Any new news there?
Well, we did get a we this was really something. China's on holiday right now until next week, and they actually tendered for 464,000 metric tons and of beans for next year. I mean, it's like, okay, so there's something going on here. Bloomberg had a great article today on commodities, just saying that the Fed needs to do more easing than what it just did. It only did a quarter point in order to give commodities a boost. And that would be especially true for like crude oil and copper. But, if that would happen, the rest should also increase because you get a lower dollar. But isn't that strange? Because we just had a drop in interest rate, but the dollar's been higher. Now, why would that be? The question that's on everybody's mind is who's buying the dollar? Because, macroeconomics say U.S. interest rates go down, so does the value of the dollar. Could it be China artificially inflating the dollar to hurt our exports? That's the question that's in my mind.
I suppose that's a good question. We'll have to examine that at some point, or somebody will, and we'll get an answer, I suppose.
I think we might get one.
Could be later. We'll figure
Yeah.
that one out.
You got that right.
Turn your attention to South America, Argentina and Brazil both.
Well, I've been giving you a lot of tough news on the Argentinian economy. They did get a little bit of good news, mostly because their economy grew just slightly on their increased soybean harvest. You remember last year they had that terrible drought, so they were way down on that. But I'll tell you what, maybe the light in the tunnel is teeny, teeny, but again, agriculture is pulling them out, and that's what saved Argentina every single time, is the ability to have agriculture boost this. It's just really sad down there. There's so much mismanagement at the government level, and this October election that's coming up scares me to pieces. But we'll have to wait and see what happens with it. With Brazil, it's still waiting for rain. 1% planted in Mato Grosso, but so, compared to 4.6% last year. And when you look at the long term, it hasn't changed very much. So bad for them, maybe good for us. It's hard to say.
Hey, Jackie, one other question. You've got a couple of dogs at home, right?
Yes, I do.
What are their names?
Riley and Toby.
Well, let me tell you about a couple of other dogs that I learned about just yesterday. Brian from St. Peter, Minnesota, called in because he knew that in our fall fun drive, we would say his pet's names on our air if he made a donation. So he called at 217-244-9455, or maybe he went online and did willpledge.org. I don't know exactly which one, and made a donation in support of agriculture. And I'm sure he told them, because they sent me a note, that this donation was in support of agriculture. And you need to do that if you're going to make a donation in either the comments section or just tell the person you're talking to if you call that 217-244-9455 number. You know what his dog's names are?
No.
Oats and Barley.
Oats and Barley. That's wonderful.
Aren't those great names?
Yes, they are.
Fantastic
yes,
names.
Yes, they are.
I hope I get to read a whole bunch more dog names off, or pet names of any kind.
So, you bet.
If folks can do that, if they can dial in right now, if the information you get from Jackie and all the rest of the brokers and crew here at Illinois Public Media makes a difference, call in with some financial support. Do it right now, 217-244-9455. Don't wait. Do it today, and I'll get those names on the air, or willpledge.org. It's quick. It's simple. It's easy. And frankly, it makes a difference. Hey, Jackie, thank you for making a difference in our lives every day on the farm as well.
Thank you, Todd. Appreciate it much.
Jackie Vakes is with Total Farm Marketing by Stuart Peterson. Joins us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Well, let's continue now the conversation we started yesterday with the Ohio State ag economist Carl Zuloff. He penned an article along with Gary Schnittke and a couple of others here on campus looking at the potential changes coming in the next farm bill and how current spending, including the MFP programs, will influence that. I asked Carl, as it's related to the surpluses we discussed yesterday, what it might mean for the kinds of programs which could be introduced in the future.
Well, there's two factors going on here that impact the policy side of things. The first is that there's a well-established tendency in U.S. policy that anytime we do ad hoc policy for anybody, Todd, not just for farmers, and what I mean by ad hoc is an individual situation. The MFP program is an individual situation. It's a policy that was created to deal with an unexpected event, in this case, the tariff war. So it's called an ad hoc policy. In other words, a policy to this particular issue. There's a tendency on the part of those who are recipients of an ad hoc policy, in this case, farmers, to try to annualize that ad hoc policy to capture those payments, in part because the impact of the ad hoc factor continues, as in the tariff war. And so people like to be at least compensated in part for the damage that's been done. So this would be called annualizing the ad hoc payments. This is a well-established thing. We've seen this in agricultural policy in recent years. The creation of this countercyclical program was a result of an ad hoc program in the late 1990s. Crop insurance routinely creates new products to deal with ad hoc disaster assistance that Congress has created. So we see this all the time. And so I would expect this also to happen here, in part because trade continues to struggle in this particular environment right here. The other thing is that if we do return to chronic surpluses, we would expect to see a very large increase in spending on farm programs. In particular, you would at least look initially at the price loss program, the PLC program, for an increase in spending. And that increase in spending was then, in the past, when we've had big increases in spending on farm programs, that has triggered a consideration of changes in farm programs to adjust to the increase in the spending. So I think there are two things to watch in this environment. One is, how do farm organizations react to MFP? Do they try to annualize it? History suggests that they will. And the second is what happens to the level of spending, particularly what happens to prices as we move forward. If prices start to really decline, spending will start to increase, and that will build political pressure.
And you believe that pressure could result in more conservation programs, whole farm set-aside programs? What kinds of things might take place?
Well, there would be a number of things to watch for how we would deal with chronic surpluses in general and an increase in spending resulting from chronic surpluses in particular. One would be that we would have serious discussions about returns to land set-asides. Land set-asides were part of foreign policy from the 1930s until the 1996 Farm Bill removed them. It would be a copayment that farmers would have to make. In order to have access, for example, to PLC and to ARC, you would have to set so many acres aside, and you would do that on an annual year. Another way to do it, and I think there would be a lot of appeal to this for a lot of non-farm members, is to increase the size of the conservation programs, to increase the size of CRP, to move to some more maybe creative conservation program. For example, a 2 or 3 year set aside for building healthy soils, interfacing it with this with the concern over organic matter, healthy soils, those sorts of things, the role of cover crops. Another thing that we could do, of course, is we could go in and actually change the programs themselves, redesign them. And one of the things that I think could come up in this environment, because MFP 2.0 is actually the largest expansion in farm programs since World War II in terms of number of commodities. There are 16 commodities in MFP 2.0 for 2019 crops that are not in Title I of the Farm Bill. And these include alfalfa hay, which is a very large acreage crop. But right now, farm programs cover just a little bit under 80% of the total acres in the country anyway, principal crop acres. And so it wouldn't be that big of a step from current policy to move towards a whole farm policy to address the issue of the impact of tariffs, which extend beyond beyond the traditional farm policy issues. So, and the way to do that would be to go to a whole farm or a whole crop farm policy. And so I think we could see potential discussion of exactly what form of support should commodities get to. So again, just to summarize, I think there are three things to watch. First is whether we go back to annual set-aside. Second is whether we increase conservation programs and the use and the putting of land into conservation programs. And the third is, do we actually get into a discussion about redesigning farm programs for the current environment, not for the past environment?
Would this be a cheaper option?
The whole farm program would probably be would be a less expensive option than to go to trying to support individual crops. And the reason it would be, I'm not sure it's cheaper than our current policy, Todd, because you're adding more commodities. But it would be cheaper than going to a commodity by commodity expansion. And the reason is that if you go to a whole farm program, then you're looking at a whole crop farm program is more likely. If you're looking at the entire income from the farm, and we all know that crops move in different ways in years. Some have increases in income, some have decreases in income, and so they will offset one another, reducing the total outlay that you would need relative to an individual crop program. So from the perspective of potential expenditures, yes, it would result in a cheaper program.
That's Carl Zuloff, ag economist from The Ohio State University. He, along with Gary Schnitke, Krista Swanson, Jonathan Kappas, and Nick Paulson, have authored an article under the Gardner Policy Series on the FarmDoc Daily website called Assessing Market Facilitation Payments in Hindsight and Implications for Future Policy. You can read it online at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. KWDU. We're now joined by Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Drew, thanks for being with us. Tell me about the weather forecast.
Dry weather is still needed across a big part of the Midwest and Northern Plains, especially the Western and Northern Corn Belt and areas from North Dakota into Manitoba. These areas have had way too much precipitation in recent weeks, and it looks like the wet pattern is going to slowly wind down as we move forward through the next 5 days. But we do have a weather event underway today, of course, across the Northern Plains and Upper Midwest, and also more rain coming up out of Mexico through West Texas into Kansas, Missouri, and parts of Illinois. And that additional moisture will maintain a wet bias for many western and northern Corn Belt areas and the Northern Plains. Tomorrow we'll see a little bit of a drier bias, but on Friday yet another disturbance is expected to evolve in the plains and parts of the western Corn Belt and up into parts of eastern Canada's prairies, and so additional moisture will be put down on areas that just simply don't need it. And crop maturation and harvest progress in all of this region will continue to be on hold until we can get a better stretch of drier weather to occur. Now, the earliest opportunity for better drying is probably going to come next week. We'll have a short-term bout of improvement taking place late this weekend into the early part of next week, but another frontal system will cut across Canada's prairies and the northern plains as we get to midweek next week, and that will generate some additional precipitation, and then it'll push through the Midwest, and so all of these areas will get one more shot of moisture. There will be 2 or 3 days of good drying between these events, and that's good news, but I don't think we're going to see a longer stretch of drier bias conditions until we get beyond the midweek storm system next week. In other areas around the world, we're still watching a developing drought in the portions of China's Yangtze River Basin area. This isn't going to be a huge issue for right now. The only summer crop that'll be negatively impacted is the late rice crop that's going to be produced across that region. But dryness could be an issue for some of the winter crops that are produced in that region, like rapeseed. There's also dryness, of course, in the southeastern United States, which I didn't mentioned before, and that area is going to see a little bit of relief, but not a lot, and there is going to need to be some significant moisture for winter wheat establishment in some of those areas as time moves along. There's also some improvement taking place in areas like France and portions of southeastern Europe where it's been dry for an extended period of time. The opportunity for relief in these areas is relatively good, although France will be real slow about getting significant moisture, but later this month there should be relief in that area. And lastly, there's still a big concern about Australia, still suffering from a significant 3-year drought. Recent conditions have not been favoring the winter wheat, barley, or canola crops, and further losses in their yield potential has occurred because of lack of precipitation during reproduction. This is still an ongoing issue. In the meantime, there's more concern about the planting of sorghum and cotton that usually start going into the ground at this time of the year in portions of East Central Australia, and there's no sign of any significant rain for those areas for quite a while.
Hey, thanks, Drew. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated. Joined us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world, and that means you're involved. 217-244-9455 to pledge your financial support, or go to willpledge.org. Either way, thank you so much for your donation. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.